To effectively halt the COVID-19 pandemic, experts say at least 70% and maybe even 80 to 90% of the population must either get the disease or get the vaccine. In addition to insufficient supply of COVID-19 vaccines, the U.S. faces another major hurdle. Some people say they're just not ready to get the vaccine. Others reject vaccines altogether. A recent study from the Pew Research Organization found that only 60% of Americans said they would be willing to get a COVID vaccine. Data from the Kaiser Family Foundation is more hopeful, with 70% of Americans saying they will get the COVID-19 vaccine. I turn to New Mexico State University public health researcher, Professor Jagdish Khubchandani, to find out who are the Americans likely to refuse a COVID vaccine. I also talked with sociology professor Jennifer Reich at the University of Colorado Denver to find out why some Americans choose not to get vaccinated during this deadly pandemic. Let's begin our discussion with Professor Khubchandani.
Professor, as co-author of a major new national study about vaccine hesitancy, tell our listeners why this research is important and how you became involved.
Thank you for having me, Mary. We started this study in summer when we were looking at people and their behaviors on wearing a mask and gloves and social distancing. And we did find a huge political divide and a social divide. Thought, what if there was a vaccine which would be invasive compared to a mask which is not invasive? Would people have similar behaviors? And so we started looking at a national random sample of people, more than 1,800, to find out if they were willing to take a vaccine if it was available today. Almost a fifth of the people across the nation did not want the vaccine. Unfortunately, the pandemic has been politicized, and it's been such a divisive issue, not only in the United States, but worldwide.
What does your research show generally with regard to reluctance of Americans to get a COVID-19 vaccine?
We find that across the nation, 50 states and more than 1,800 people, a fifth of the people in the United States said they're not likely to take the vaccine. And when we dive deeper, we find differences by socio-demographic characteristics and how people view COVID.
Let's talk about those subgroups to learn more about vaccine hesitancy. Which group of those you surveyed were least likely to say they would get a COVID-19 vaccine?
You know, we had certain groups of people. For example, African Americans had the highest vaccine hesitancy. Hispanics were second in the line. Those who have lower education had the highest vaccine hesitancy. I think for African Americans, if I can add, the fact that there has been such historical mistrust in the enterprise of medicine and science among African Americans, and there's been history of mistreatment in clinical trials, it did not surprise me that they had the highest vaccine hesitancy. We still have to reach out to African American people, bring about a generational change, build some trust, and healthcare providers have to be at the front line, recruiting them in clinical trials and also encouraging them to take the vaccine.
You also surveyed people for things like, I don't think I'm going to get the disease, or if I get it, I don't think anything bad is going to happen. What were your findings there?
Regarding the severity and susceptibility to COVID, I think people who believe that they're invincible and they cannot be infected, and if they were to be infected, nothing major would happen to them. It's almost like what we are looking at worldwide. Some people have such low-risk perception that they don't believe they'll be infected and it's not a major disease. And so these are the people who are less likely to take a vaccine.
You talked about race as a huge factor of those who say they will likely not get a vaccine. What about education? High levels of education, low levels of education? Where do these folks rank in terms of how likely they are to get the COVID-19 vaccine?
It's a confluence of factors. Those who are racial minorities with lower education, live in rural America, have lesser income, are the most likely to deny a vaccine. And in part, it's because they're hugely influenced by conspiracy theories and don't have the level of awareness. And it's a new type of vaccine that we have now, a new platform. And so it's difficult to believe something that's been produced so quick. And these are groups that have historically had lesser connections with healthcare, have always been skeptical because, you know, they feel like I'm poor, I'm always a victim in this healthcare system, no one treats me with respect, and there's lack of trust there. So we have African Americans, Hispanics, people with lower education, lower income, and those who live in remote parts of America, the rural America, were the most vaccine hesitant.
As I read your research, I see that living in the Northeast makes you less likely to believe that you would like to get a vaccine, and the West is not far behind that. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we did find some geographical differences. People in the Northeast, I mean, many of them could have been infected earlier, and many of them have seen the pandemic pass away and rates lowering down in summer. Gradually with time, people in the Northeast felt like the pandemic is gone now, and maybe that influenced their perception.
And what about the West?
Challenges, we have a lot of diversity here in the West. So we had a larger proportion of Hispanic men in the West participating in the study, which tells you why they were more likely to be vaccine hesitant.
2020 was a presidential election year, and that unfortunately led to the polarization of COVID-19, especially when it came to things like mask wearing. What did your research show about political preferences and willingness to get a COVID-19 vaccine?
Unfortunately, the whole nation was divided and confused, and so we did find differences in vaccine hesitancy by political affiliation. People who claimed that they were Republicans and others had the highest vaccine hesitancy.
And so if you were a Democrat, you were more likely to say you would get a vaccine.
Across the board, even within Democrats, we had people who had vaccine hesitancy. So, you know, it was not so strong of a predictor, but even within Democrats, even today, you would find people who are not likely to take a vaccine.
What about age when it comes to deciding whether or not you'd like to get the COVID-19 vaccine? Common sense would tell you that the older you are, the more fear you have of getting a disease that could kill you.
Right. Certain groups of people, the healthy young people, are more likely to deny a vaccine because we have created a notion that if you are young, you are healthy, you don't have a pre-existing condition, nothing can happen to you. And we found that in our study, those who are above the age of 60 were the most accepting of the vaccine, had the least vaccine hesitancy.
Was gender a significant predictor of willingness to get the COVID-19 vaccine?
Not hugely predictive of vaccine hesitancy, but having a child at home in families with women was a strong predictor of denying a vaccine.
What was the biggest surprise you got when you surveyed U.S. adults about COVID-19 vaccine receptiveness?
How people in the United States perceive diseases and how severe they can be. So those who thought that, you know, it's not going to be a serious disease, I will not be infected, unfortunately, they were not wearing masks, and they were more likely to deny a vaccine. And I just don't know why we have those perceptions about seriousness of COVID and the perception of being infected when we have evidence now across the board, all types of age groups are being affected. Even young children, 15 years old, have died from COVID. I'm hoping that people will get to know that it's not just the old people who are dying. It's everyone across the board. No one is risk-free. And we've had children as young as 5 die. So, you know, none of us is risk-free. And that comes to me as a surprise that many young people who were partying, going out, celebrating, went for a spring break trip to a beach. I think those kinds of behaviors need to stop, and people have to understand that we are in the middle of a deadly pandemic and no one is risk-free.
The Kaiser Family Foundation reports that almost 30% of medical workers are reluctant to get a COVID-19 vaccine. This is shocking and counterintuitive. Why do you think that's so?
Right. Historically, we have always assumed that healthcare professionals are different from the general population, or they're better than the general population. We had another study where we looked at gun buying behaviors and hand washing behaviors. Unfortunately, healthcare professionals were not better than the general population. They were also more likely to buy guns in the pandemic, had more depression, anxiety, and suicidal, and less likely to be practicing hand washing. So we have to realize, even if they're healthcare professionals, highly educated, when they go back home, they're a part of our society. And I've known healthcare professionals who don't want to take the vaccine, have not taken the disease seriously, because beyond their profession, they are people of the society and they are influenced by the society. And, you know, because maybe they are also waiting to see what happens to people once they get the vaccine. Maybe I'll be next in the line and check out if everything goes okay, then I'll take the vaccines.
Do you know how adults in the U.S. stack up compared to people in other countries when it comes to willingness to get a COVID-19 vaccine?
Unfortunately, we are not in the top in vaccine acceptance. We are somewhere close to Mexico, Brazil, and many of the low-income countries. which comes as a surprise because, you know, in many low-income countries, there's hardly any education with people. The incomes are low. They don't have experience with healthcare. They don't have the mass media and the technology to keep them aware and informed. And yet United States does not do better in vaccine acceptance, even compared to Mexico and Brazil.
And why do you think that is?
We have all the high-income countries have had such high amount of socio-political upheaval and protests, and you know, in the middle of the pandemic, that it's almost made us mimic what's happening in low-income countries. Huge amount of distrust in the government, large amount of protests, politicization, and the pandemic becoming a divisive issue.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I do want to add, maybe we'll see more vaccine acceptance in the United States, given that so many millions have been vaccinated. It's becoming more acceptable, and preliminary reports suggest that it's not a hugely painful vaccine to take, and it doesn't have any major side effects. So hopefully we are done with 2020, and we'll move forward in 2021 with greater optimism and less division in the society about masks and vaccine, and we'll all be in this together.
We've been talking to New Mexico State University Professor Koob Shandani about his new nationwide study on COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy. His research explores just who in America is likely to refuse a COVID-19 vaccine. Now let's turn to University of Colorado Denver sociologist Jennifer Reich. Professor Reich will explore why some people are vaccine hesitant.
Professor Reich, let's clarify for our KSFR listeners exactly what vaccine hesitancy is. And by the way, what's wrong with the term anti-vaxxers?
You know, I've talked to lots of parents who choose not to vaccinate their kids in the course of my research, and almost none of them would call themselves anti-vax. In fact, most of them would say that they don't actually disbelieve in vaccines or that they're not against vaccines, but that they're really engaged in a process of deciding whether they feel vaccines are entirely necessary at this time in the way recommended and feel like they're making individual decisions for their own families. Not that necessarily that they would forever oppose vaccines or that they oppose all vaccines.
Now, you wrote the book, Calling the Shots, Why Parents Reject Vaccines. You've studied anti-vaccine sentiment among parents extensively. So a large segment, maybe as much as 30% of the U.S. population, was already predisposed to reject some or all vaccines even before COVID-19 came along. Are these the same people who now oppose the COVID-19 vaccines for adults?
If we try to think, where does that bring us for a COVID vaccine? People are weighing risk, and it's clear that COVID is a different kind of risk than any other kind of infectious disease that's vaccine preventable we face right now, because it's ubiquitous, because more than half of Americans know someone who has been hospitalized or died of COVID, because it's a much more significant, ever-present, omnipresent kind of risk that people are calculating against. So that's really important. But we also have some of the same fundamental questions, which is this a technology that people trust? Are these agencies and experts who they feel are free of conflict of interest, whose opinions and advice they find reliable and trustworthy? And I think the same question that we've been grappling with for more than a decade around childhood vaccines is, do people have the opportunity to ask the questions that they want answers to so they can make decisions that they can feel comfortable with in the long run?
So back to the question, though, do you think that the parents who were concerned about vaccines for a variety of reasons, some perhaps more valid than others, do you think that's going to translate into their skepticism about COVID-19 vaccines, or do we not have any way of knowing?
Are these literally the same people? Like, could we round them up and count them? I would say no, that there's a lot of similarities and overlaps, but it's not categorical. And that's really important, that when I started doing research more than a decade ago on this topic, I really thought there were two kinds of people, who accept vaccines and people who reject them. And what I found in the course of my research is that that's just not true, that there is a lot in the middle. I talk to families who fully immunize one child in their family and don't vaccinate the other child. I have examples of people who rejected all vaccines for a long time and then changed their minds because the context of their life changed. They were traveling internationally. Somebody in their family had a health crisis. Something changed that changed their decisions. And so it's not really a categorical membership, and that's exactly true where we are with the COVID vaccine. You know, pretty consistently about 40% of Americans say they're not sure they want this vaccine. And they're not saying they never want it, but what people are mostly saying is they're not sure they want to be amongst the first to get it. They're not sure they want it until there's more answers about longevity of coverage, possible adverse reactions, the ability to prevent transmission. And those are things that are still not entirely known. What we know with this vaccine is it's really good at preventing hospitalization and death, which is a significant accomplishment. And that alone is motivating tons of people, as you can see every day, lining up for vaccines. But that may not be enough to convince people who perceive themselves to be at relatively low risk of the worst outcomes from deciding that they most want it now. And that's a group that we would define as vaccine hesitant, but not necessarily anti-vaccine.
The big question here is why people are resistant to the COVID-19 vaccine.
There will always be a small number of people who will never be persuaded vaccines are ever safe or ever necessary. And that has been true for more than 100 years. That is a numerically small and very vocal portion of the population.
Let me stop you there. It seems like it has been growing. Is that not correct?
I think the never vaccine people, depending how we look at it, the number is maybe growing in tiny ways, but I think that their claims are gaining greater prominence, that they've been able to really amplify a lot of their concerns through new kinds of media strategies. The one place that I think we're seeing differences that I think is of great concern is that we're seeing an increasing number, I think, of sympathetic politicians to the claims about vaccines. And there's, I think, some important examples in different kinds of state and local governments. And that's really new, that we see government officials rejecting government expertise. Vaccine decision-making is an extension of all of decision-making. And so what we've really seen in the last several decades is that we have encouraged individuals to take ownership of their own health. And we've told people to download apps and count their calories and count their steps. We've told them that they should watch their nutrition and that and implicit in that is the assurance that if you do a good job managing your health, that you can avoid disease. And the problem with this, of course, is that that's not how disease in general works, and it's also not how infectious disease works. But that kind of personal responsibility permeates a ton of our cultural landscape. And so it's really unsurprising that when it comes to something like infectious disease, individuals believe that they can personally manage disease risk through hard work. And of course, the problem is we're never alone in our individual decision making, and nothing tells us that like infectious disease, where we can't fully anticipate who might be infectious and where we might encounter risk. What we've really developed in the last couple of decades is distrust of expertise and distrust, I think, of the potentials for science to have conflicts of interest that are not fully disclosed to people. And instead, we've really encouraged everyone to do their own, quote, research, although it's not research the way scientists do research. But we've really encouraged individuals to gather their own information, get second opinions, Google for answers, and that democratization of information has been really important for giving people the ability to question what's relevant. It's made it possible to make visible the way inequalities exist in healthcare. There's some really good outcomes to that. But one of the challenges of it is it's also made it much more challenging to understand who's an expert and what counts as expertise and how individuals should weigh that information against other information.
One reason to get the COVID-19 vaccine is to protect yourself against a disease that is 10 times deadlier than the flu. Another reason is to protect others, your extended family, in your community. Do you think that we as Americans are so individualistic that we don't much care about society as a whole?
I will say throughout COVID, I have seen amazing acts of generosity around me. I've seen people buying groceries at the store for people they don't even know. I've seen people offering to help people who are struggling. I've seen healthcare workers risking health to hold up iPads for people so they could connect. I reject the logic that we are selfish and that we are not concerned about other people or our communities.
Health experts say that between 70 and 90% of us will need to either get the COVID-19 vaccine or get the disease itself to stop the pandemic. How would you suggest we encourage people who may be hesitant to get the vaccine?
This is a really, I think, key question, and we no longer live in an era where people hear expert advice and follow it unquestioningly. We don't have that same kind of deference to medical expertise anymore, and people are much more savvy consumers of healthcare and their healthcare choices, and so we have to take that seriously. And that can be challenging, I think, for experts who feel sometimes they're being questioned by people who don't have equal training and equal background, and it doesn't make it less important. We can think about other models where patients and experts talking to each other have yielded better ways of doing healthcare, and this is no exception. So what we know from a lot of examples already is that two-way communication is much better than messaging. So we know that community matters. We know that having conversations matter. We also know that people are inclined to trust those who they believe share their values, share their experiences, or understand the context of their life. So we know that community leaders can be really powerful. We know religious leaders have a role to play here. We have great examples in other healthcare interventions where people like beauticians and barber shops have become places where people have conversations about things like breast cancer screening that have been really important for increasing understanding and informed decision making.
If I understand you correctly, you're saying that the message needs to be tailored to the specific group and it doesn't need to be so much messaging as a conversation. I'm not sure how you do that with 300 million people.
I think it's the messaging matters, but the messenger matters also. I think the way that we do this is we stop assuming that there are two groups of people, those who trust vaccines and those who don't.
Thanks so much to our guest today, sociology professor Jennifer Reich from the University of Colorado, Denver, and public health professor Jagdish Khubchandani from New Mexico State University. For KSFR, I'm Mary Lou Cooper.